I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. A recent book looks at the residential architecture that emerged in post-war Vancouver. It's a handsome book about some of the styles that came to homes on this side of the coast, some of the practices that emerged, and the seminal figures whose work gave us what's become known as West Coast style. The book is The West Coast Modern House, and its editor is Greg Bellerby, who joins me now to talk about this book that features many photographs of houses built from the from 1940 to the mid-1960s. The book evokes innovation in design as well as nostalgia, and it also presents how these homes define a certain time and place, as well as reflect the relevance today. Greg Bellerby was director-curator of the Charles H. Scott Gallery at Emily Carr University, which co-publishes this book with Figure One, from 1988 to 2013. He was a commissioner and co-curator of the Canadian Pavilion at the 2006 Venice Biennale. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Greg Bellerby. Mr. Bellerby, good morning.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. So let's say you had to define what West Coast modern looks like. I mean, could you?
Well, I think people do have a picture in their minds what it kind of looks like. And, you know, the first and foremost, it's, you know, the idea of the post and beam. So houses that were made with wood using very large structural components in this strategy of using a post and a beam, so that you could have very large open spaces to the rooms that of the house. And I think that's really the thing that really defined the style, if you like, and that, as well as the use of local materials, lots of wood, stone, and natural materials from this region.
Where in Metro Vancouver, the Lower Mainland, say, might you see a preponderance of these homes?
Well, certainly the preponderance is in West Vancouver and North Vancouver. That's where the majority of them were built originally, because they were new developments. But also you can find them smattered throughout the Lower Mainland, you know, South Vancouver, and even out into the Fraser Valley. Coquitlam and Port Coquitlam do have some nice examples of these modernist houses.
I asked you about the look, but as you said, it's more than say how they look and the materials that they use. The sense that I got in reading your book was that there was a certain mindset from these architects, from these designers. Could you speak to that and perhaps what they were going through in this post-war era?
Yeah, certainly. I think what was happening, and it wasn't just happening here in Vancouver, it was really happening primarily, I think, all up and down the West Coast. This idea after the war of using new materials, looking at new kinds of construction methods, and I think that was partly brought over from Europe. A lot of the European architects, Richard Neutra and people like that, had immigrated to the United States and were starting to, look at how they could employ some of the strategies that they had learned in Europe to the new world, I guess, and in particular, I think the West Coast. The West Coast, for sure, was looking at the idea of looking at local materials, wood and naturalism, more so than the East Coast, which was, they were still into more like brick and concrete and steel, even though they did use steel on the West Coast as well. So this was this idea that it was a new beginning and a break with the past. So therefore, rather than looking to these older styles like Georgian or whatever, this was a kind of a new modern era after the Second World War.
And do you see these sorts of designs, say, elsewhere? I know you may not get, say, the same materials, mm-hmm. say, on the prairies or Central Canada, even Eastern Canada. But I mean, the look of it, I mean, did that, get emulated elsewhere?
Yeah, it did. And the look, I guess you're asking me what's the indicative of the style. It's also flat roofs. Mm. And this was something that, you didn't really see much before the war. A little bit, but after the post-war, the idea of the flat roof, post and beam construction, large spaces, large glass walls that looked out onto either views or onto gardens. And this style certainly was emulated here on the West Coast, up and down, but also on the prairies and back east as well. So it was emulated elsewhere, but those are really the things that define, I think, the look and the style of these modern houses.
Banks out here didn't like the flat roofs.
They did not. Not at first. It was difficult. That you had to have two things to get a mortgage through CMHC back in this is actually post-war in the 30s, was you had to have a basement, mm-hmm. And you had to have a pitched roof. Those were the two things that you had to have. And so it took quite a while for architects to convince people with the Canadian Mortgage and Housing that, you know, these houses were okay, they were stable, you didn't need a basement, you could build on a concrete slab, and you could have a flat roof. But it took a lot of convincing, and they were very skeptical for a long time.
Well, what would they give as a reason why you couldn't get a mortgage if you didn't have a basement or a pitched roof? I mean, were there specific reasons?
Well, I think it's partly because it was new. People didn't, and the fact that they were thinking that, well, if you built these, who's gonna buy them? You know, and if you needed to sell the house, would anybody ever want to buy a house that had no basement? You know, because the standard was to have a full size basement. You know, and that's where you put the heater and the hot water and the furnace, and you know, so it was just something kind of new, and I guess they were thinking of, well, if we're going to guarantee this mortgage, then we want to be able to get our money out of it, and we don't want to be stuck with a bad deal. So, but eventually they did come around, for sure.
Now, they don't have basements in Richmond, so how did they get around that there?
I don't know. I think it was, even if it just was a crawl space, it was just the idea that it was on grade, and, that was the problem. Not that it even if it had a crawl space, it was just something that was so new, you know, that people were very skeptical.
Is there a certain color associated with say the West Coast modern house? When we go to downtown Vancouver, we see the glass on the modern buildings is sort of bluish green. Is there a certain color to the West Coast modern house?
Well, I would say, you know, from my experience, that the idea was to adopt a kind of organic modernism approach to building, which meant that you would try to situate the house within the landscape. So you weren't fighting with the landscape, so you weren't putting up a house and painting it blue or red. You were building a house that actually was integrated into the landscape, so therefore the colors of them were more muted, more natural tones. So they were light grays, light green gray, maybe use of cedar on the outside and in the inside as well. So there was a real approach to using natural materials and natural colors.
This book of yours, Greg, does a great job at introducing us to some of these seminal figures in the history of this part of the world. Ned Pratt, let's begin with him. His essay in the book is sort of what the book revolves around, because it really explains what all of this is. So, now, tell us who Ned Pratt was.
Ned Pratt was a young architect who studied at McGill and then came out to Vancouver. And started working for a firm called Thompson. It was actually Sharp and Thompson, and that firm later became Sharp, Thompson, Berwick and Pratt. He was the Pratt part of it, and Bob Berwick was also a young architect. They met at architecture school, and they both came to Vancouver and were hired. And he really promoted the idea of was the first person to really promote the idea of modernism in Vancouver, not only for residential architecture, but also for commercial buildings and institutional buildings. They built a lot of, designed and built a lot of buildings out at UBC during the 50s, the Buchanan Building, the Freddie Wood Theater, are all examples of buildings that they have designed, and he really promoted it. And also they were, through Ned Pratt, he was a very... a supportive person, so he's very supportive of younger architects who were just coming out of school at that point, at the post-war and into the 50s, and so he's very open to hiring these people and supporting them. But also Thompson, Berwick, and Pratt, after Sharp left, they really became the hotbed for a discussion and dialogue about modernism and modern design and contemporary architecture. So he was really I guess you could call him the father of modernism in Vancouver. And he was a great supporter of it, and supported all these other people. And there are many of these architects went through Thompson, Berwick, and Pratt. They were hired there for a couple of years, and then they went on to form their own firms and did work on their own. So they really got their start through Thompson, Berwick, and Pratt. And Ned was a very strong supporter of those people and the idea of modernism.
And you also talk in the book about architects like Erickson. Mm-hmm. And B.C. Binning. Do you think there are people like that today who have who aren't, say, innovative as much as they are, say, visionary, and not just for today, but looking to the future and how this place will turn out?
Well, yeah, that's a very good question. In the book and also in my research, what I found that there's three generations, I think, that span the period, say, from 1940 to the present. And there's three generations of architects who took up the mantle of modernism and kind of worked it in their own way. So the first generation is like Ned Pratt and the people at Thompson, Berwick, and Pratt, Arthur Erickson, and Fred Hollingsworth, Barry Downs. These are sort of the first generation. So they were working in the late 40s and the early 50s and into the 60s. Then there's a second generation of people like, Peter Cardew, who started working, came in the 70s, late 70s, and is still working today. Mm-hmm. John and Patricia Patkow, they're the second generation. So there's a number of those people who took up the mantle in the late 70s and through the 80s and into the 90s. And today there's a third generation of younger architects who are, I think, they're working with kind of modernist, still modernist ideas, but they're interpreting them in a contemporary West Coast manner. And those are David Battersby and Heather Howitt, Darcy Jones, who's a young architect, Javier Campos, and measured architects. So there's a number of them who are still working within that tradition, but they have their own, the materials have certainly changed, the building codes have changed, so they're trying to find their mark, but still appreciate what had gone on before them, and working within, I think, the best tenets of what modern was about, making the spaces that are very livable and very comfortable, taking advantages of a landscape, and making the most of that, and kind of pared down, contemporary look, rather than looking far, far back, as I was saying earlier, to other examples from, the Georgian era or, different things. They're really looking at it from a contemporary point of view.
You mentioned the building codes being different than they once were. Is there a lot of that precludes architects and designers to say being as innovative as these folks were?
I think so. What it's meant is the expense. Mm. So back in the post-war period, the building codes were not that strict, so ordinary, what I would like to call ordinary people, could actually afford to hire an architect and build a modern house. And again, property values were less too, of course. Like you could, sort of a relatively ordinary person could afford, a building lot in West Vancouver or North Vancouver, or even South Vancouver at that point. Hire an architect and build a relatively inexpensive house. We're talking of most of the houses in that early period. They cost between $8,000 and $20,000 to build. A $20,000 house was an expensive house then. Yeah. Whereas now, because of the building codes and because of the high property values, it's very restrictive. There's not that many people who can afford to hire a visionary kind of architect, if I can call it that, to design a house from scratch and to build it to today's codes, because again, the codes mean the materials that go into it have to be of a certain quality, of a certain certain standard, and therefore this all adds expense. And like I say, for the ordinary person, it's not very affordable.
And these houses, they were homes, weren't they? I mean, they're comfortable to live in. I mean, we like to think that something that looks nice may not be altogether practical. But these were livable places, weren't they?
I think they were, you know, and I've been in a number of them, and I think even today, you know, there's still very, you go into them, and the spaces just feel comfortable. Something about the spaciousness of them, but also the idea, this is where the first idea of the open plan came into being. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you could have an integration between, you know, the kitchen and the dining room and the family room and the living room. And they were spaces that revolved around the family and around the family doing things together, eating together, cooking together, you know, I wouldn't say watching TV, but I guess some of them did watch TV or entertaining together, so they were very, very amenable to this kind of home life situation, and then also the relationship between the inside and the outside. So the inside spaces, you know, looked out into a garden, and often they had patio doors that would open up onto the garden, and so the garden was part of a living space. It wasn't just something that you kind of looked at, but it was actually a nice flow from the inside to the outside. So it would also became an outdoor living space as well. And I think that really, promoted the whole idea of the home as being a place that was nurturing and supportive to family life.
Now, this project, the West Coast Modern House, it took you a number of years to put together. Is that correct?
It did, yeah. I worked on it for about 6 years.
Where did you get the photographs?
Oh, which is a great question, because the photographs came from a number of sources, and primarily at the time, the way people found out about modernist houses was through Western Homes and Living, which today is now, I think it's called Western Homes, is now the version of it, or Western Living, sorry. But then it was published, it started in 1950. And the publishers were very supportive of modernist architecture, so they would feature houses, they would hire photographers, and they would be like Graham Warrington was a photographer here in Vancouver. He worked in the 1950s and through into the beginning of the 60s, photographing houses, and primarily a lot of them were photographed for Western Homes and Living. In the late 50s and through the 60s, Selwyn Pullen, who's still alive and well, and took many, many photographs. Again, he worked for Western Homes and Living. He also worked for individual architects and photographed them because it was important for them to get documentation as well. And, for instance, Selwyn still has a fantastic archive. He's kept all his negatives. And so a great source for the book was Selwyn Pullen's archives. And thirdly, another photographer that we borrowed heavily from was John Folker, who also worked for various architectural magazines and photographed here in Vancouver, more so in the late 60s and into the 70s. So, and that's really the record that we have, because a lot of the houses, of course, have been demolished or they've been so renovated out of the original kind of concept that they were because of the, they were small, two bedroom, sometimes three bedrooms, but as families wanted bigger houses, they renovated them, so therefore that spirit of the original house is gone, except it still exists through the photographs that were taken by these great photographers.
Yeah, they're great photos, and you feel like you're there. I wanted to ask how many houses are in the book, and as opposed to how many are demolished.
That's a really good question. I probably have been hesitant about wanting to know the exact number that are gone.
Right.
But there are 80 houses that are illustrated in the book, and I would say that probably more than half are gone, or have been changed to or renovated out of recognition. But I know that stock of houses is dwindling, and it's still dwindling today. And the book by no means is comprehensive. One of the things that I found out when I was doing the book, I say we have 80 examples, but there are more. Through the process of doing the research on the book, I would find more and more examples of these houses, or someone would tell me about, oh, this is a Ron Tom house, it still exists, it's great, you should go to it and go see it. And so we discovered that there's still lots of houses. Unfortunately, we couldn't find the space for them within the book, limited the size of the book and the cost of producing it. So I think there's still a great number of houses that that could deserve to be recorded and published at some time in the future.
So what,
and certainly preserved, yeah. Preserved somehow.
I mean, you go up and down Cambie, there's a lot of houses, say, from King Edward to 49th that are disappearing quickly.
They are,
What happened in the late 60s into the 70s that because the book stops, I guess, in 66, I think. What happens to where West Coasters are in terms of what they're looking for in their architecture? So something does change, doesn't it?
Yeah, as I pointed out, I think the book really covers, I think, what we're kind of calling sort of the high period of modernism in Vancouver. This is when, you know, it started, you know, from the post-war, the mid-40s through to about 1966, it developed. So it started, and there was innovation upon innovation through to about 1966, and then it became, I won't say it became stifled, or it kind of stopped innovating in a way. I mean, they had explored the kind of most of the modernism, and then after that, it really became replicating what had already been done before. So, and we stopped at the example of saying Arthur Erickson's Gordon Smith House Number 2, which is really the iconic image of West Coast modernism and just a fantastic house. And after that, it started to change. The clients started to change. Mm-hmm. They wanted bigger houses. They wanted something more and less of something that was original. In my mind, anyway, about this spirit of making a house for a family. They really became more houses for sort of richer people who could afford bigger houses and more ostentatious materials. And so I think for me, it kind of lost some of the spirit of what these original houses of the post-war were trying to establish. The lots became less and less less affordable, but also became harder to build on. So in the late 60s and early 70s, there was a phenomenon called mineshaft modern, and where architects were finding these very, very steep lots, most of them in West Vancouver, and building these houses that were sort of creeped up the sides of these very, very steep slopes. And, you know, again, they kind of look like mineshaft shacks in a way. I mean, certainly they were far better, far, far more interesting than that. So that became a phenomena that kind of replaced some of the modern houses with this idea of this kind of more, I think they were more interested in using these materials and using the site and building onto the site in a way that wasn't really the same as what it was previous to the 60s. So it kind of got supplanted by this shift towards this kind of more kind of mine shaft, and that happened right through into the 1980s.
Yeah. What do you make of how this part of the world looks today?
What I'm today?
Yeah.
I think we've lost a lot. I think that in some way, you know, the architecture that we have now, although there's some fine examples of contemporary houses that are in my mind meet a kind of criteria that I like to think of for contemporary houses and being unique and being individual, but also being of this place. I also find that so much of it is about hearkening back to, it's almost the early 20th century. So the the idea of the houses and townhouses and developments that we see, you know, have nothing to do with this place. They're kind of craftsmen kind of mm-hmm. houses. And I don't think that was ever, it had a small period here, but it seems to be it's just so indicative and kind of boring and so I think it's lost a lot of its innovation. And I guess people, you go back to what we were talking about originally about, you know, how to get a mortgage. Well, I guess people feel more comfortable with the idea that it's a house that looks like their grandfather or their grandparents' house, or the house that, you know, maybe, I don't know what the appeal is, but for me it's all kind of faux. It's all fake. It's not original, and it's just a kind of fake architecture, and I don't know about the commercial architecture, condo towers. Again, they're pretty much, you can't tell one from the other.
Right.
And I think that, you know, we don't have a lot of unique and innovative architecture these days.
So the spirit of innovation that is throughout your book, The West Coast Modern House, can that happen again?
That's a very good question. I don't know. I would like to believe that it can. I would like to believe that if we do two things. One, if we appreciate and preserve, you know, that modernist era, and see it for what it is and value it for what it is, it will then also open up a dialogue and a discussion about what the future might be and what innovation we can do today and into the future. So I'm hopeful that something like that would be able to happen. I'm not necessarily terribly optimistic about whether it would really happen or not, but I would like to think that it's possible. And I know that there are younger architects today who are interested in doing things that are innovative, that are contemporary, and I think they're interested in trying to find their own way of doing it. And I think that was the same spirit of, the post-war in the 1950s, and so, you know, hopefully that will happen again.
Greg, this is not only a gorgeous book, but it's a book that will, I hope, it's been out for several weeks now, I hope people will pick it up and have a conversation about this place and what it looks like and what it should be and what it's become, because I think that's what I got out of it, at least. And so congratulations on this book,
and
continued good luck with it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
The book is called The West Coast Modern House, Vancouver Residential Architecture. It's published by Figure One and the Charles H. Scott Gallery. Its editor, Greg Bellerby, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.